morning.
When I was drawn in theory to the United Church and I wanted to check it out, I went to a little church up on Highway 6 north of Mount Forest called Letterbreen. That was the home church of Loreen Hay, for those who, many of you would know her from this congregation, and it was also the home church of Carol Leibold. And it was the end of 1989, and Carol was a rep for presbytery. So she was the go-getter in the congregation. Her mom and dad had been the patriarch and matriarch. And she was always at the forefront of everything for the congregation's good. And so the next year or two, we got involved with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. And we had people from the city coming and helping to move stones at the beginning of the season. I even didn't know, coming from a farm, that they had stones up there. But anyways, and it was just a really good connection with us, city church, and us country folk. And Carol and her husband, Glenn, have been farming for years and years and years.
Not that old.
Oh, yeah, a couple of years. And just since a long... Anyways, and... I think they're pretty self-sufficient. Like Carol cans and has a big garden and hunts and fishes and all of those things to try to sustain the earth and improve the soil. And I consider Carol to be a good friend, and I'm proud of that. And I respect her for the choices that she's made in her life, living as a Christian. So thank you, Carol, that you would say farewell to your Drayton congregation for this one Sunday and come here and share with us your message.
Thank you, Reverend Meg, and to all of the congregation, especially to the Mission and Service, Mission and Outreach Committee for the invitation to be here. Imagine if this was the mantra that you lived with. My grandparents died of starvation. My parents died of starvation. I will die of starvation. That's the belief that many of the 95 million people that live in Ethiopia live with every day. Canadian Food Grains Bank provides hope. Hope to those 95 million people that they will not die of starvation. I'm one of the many volunteers with the Canadian Food Grains Bank. I was at that event. What it didn't show you was the itchy and the scratch when those combines all went past. Unfortunately, they planned it wrong. The ditch was on the wrong side of the wind that day. And we were covered, and we scratched. Canadian Food Grains Bank uses food for work. In many times, that's what they do. They go into a country, and they provide some sort of work project that will give the people dignity. They want to work. They're happy workers. And the work that they provide hopefully makes something more sustainable in the country. This would be an average day's pay. More often than not, it would be gathered up after maybe a week or maybe a month's work, depending on what the project is, and they'd put it in one of these bags, and you saw one of the bags, and one of the people carrying one of these bags, they'd just have it full, and they'd hoist it onto their back, and away they'd walk home. Upon occasion, they'd be lucky enough to have a donkey to put it on. But that's what they would have. The other side is that these bags often were used as decorations in their homes, their shacks. That would be a decoration. Some people don't think that making people work for food is a good idea. And in some cases, Canadian Food Grains Bank, if it's a dire emergency, they do go in and give food without work. But making them work for it, or asking them to work for it, as I said, it really builds their dignity. Water. What a precious commodity. Far too often in Canada, we take it for granted. We can go to our taps, we can turn it on, we can decide if and when we want to have a shower, wash our hair, brush our teeth, and leave that water running the whole time. We can even go out and water flowers, grass, our car. Ethiopians don't have that opportunity. When I was there on a food study tour, and this is something that Canadian Food Grains Bank does, and I encourage anyone that has any interest in doing such a thing to go. It is a life-changing experience, it's an eye-opening experience. Ethiopia has two rainy seasons. One of the projects the Canadian Food Grains Bank decided to do was to build water collection ponds. Ponds that would hold water for a period of time between rainy seasons that the people could gather the water, use it for drinking if necessary, if they didn't want to walk the maybe 10 kilometers to get it, and water vegetable gardens, giving them nutritious, wholesome food. They'd get them to dig the ponds, build channels to let the water run in, sort of like an eave trough, but it's on the side of a ridge. This was a great idea, except the first big rainy season came along. They didn't take into account that it would be too much water, too fast, and many of the ponds just washed away. So they said, okay, let's cement them. They got them to dig them again. They cemented them. Great. We're ready. Rainy season comes. They didn't take into account that the soil around the ponds, underneath the ponds, it was porous. So what happened is the ponds cracked. As the material around them expanded, they cracked. So they said, okay, we've got a pond here and we've got cement in it. Let's take a plastic liner. We'll take a plastic liner, we'll put it inside the pond. Oh, fine and dandy, we're set. We've now got water. How many of you have ever walked on plastic when it's wet? Yeah. Animals and children drowned in the ponds because they didn't realize. Now they thatch the roofs, protects the children and the pets from drowning, but it also prevents evaporation. The one farmer that we went to visit was so proud. He could now grow three, not one, not two, but three crops of vegetables with his water pond. And he was so happy because now some of his children could actually afford to go to school. Stones. Meg mentioned the stones. We had to pick them at our project. You're wondering, well, what's a stone got to do with food? Another project. They would line the roads, because there were some villages that were out in the middle of the desert. No access. Nobody hardly knew they were there. So they would get the people to line those roads with stones so that you could find them. They could receive food, shipments, they could also go to the markets and take their food in to be sold. The other use of stones was for water terracing. Now, everybody knows what a terracing is, right? You take a mountainside, you've got water running down it, hill, and you terrace it. They took stones and they built the terraces and said, okay, there, plant your wheat, plant your grain, plant your teff. Great. We Westerners forgot to take into account that when you build a lot of stones, sometimes rats get into them. The rats would get into them, they'd come out at night and eat their grain. Problem to overcome, but it was overcome. Another problem with the stones and the terracing idea was watering them. Now, I heard a great story just this past week from a fellow who has just been to Ethiopia a month ago. They're paying the women, Canadian Food Grains Bank, are paying the women with food to water the trees that they plant on those terraces. They take your empty water bottle, they punch a little tiny pinhole in the bottom, and they set it beside the tree. Drip irrigation. Lasts, he said, about 3 days. In that 3 days, they would go back and forth, walking 10 kilometers both ways, each way, gather more water, fill up the bottles, and allow it to drip again. They're making a difference. They're taking those trees, and those trees are rooting, kind of a sorry little, kind of reminds me of a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. But taking those trees and they're making the mountains once again green. Every one of his slides that he showed me this week, I'm looking at them, I'm going, wow, look at how green it is. When I was there, there was very little green on top of any of the mountains. And another pay for work, someone would guard the trees. Actually be paid to guard the trees. You're really hungry, and your animals are really hungry. You will take the leaves off the trees as fodder for your animals. So to prevent them from doing that, they paid someone to do it. Gave them 3 kilograms of grain a day, probably, just to stand there to keep animals and other people away. Much of Ethiopia has been deforested through the centuries because of drought, because of war, but again, because they want to use the leaves to feed their animals, and they need the wood to cook on. So it has been pretty much deforested, top to bottom. Desert areas, mountainsides, nothing. When I was there, it was barren. It was sad. But to see his pictures, I'm thinking, okay, it's working. It is working. This one, of course, the grasses are another that hold the erosion. Try and find grass this time of year outside. Grasses also prevent the erosion, and they would do grassed waterways. So as water wants to come down the mountain naturally, when you've got all the trees and grasses removed, it erodes away. They put grasses and they fence it in, so again, that the nomads in particular wouldn't come along with their goats, cattle, and eat it completely off. So they did improve it by holding that soil in that small area. And each time you hold the soil, even though you've got a tree, this one kind of, I have struggled sometimes to understand this one, but even though you have a tree creates more moisture because it shades what's underneath it and it doesn't evaporate as quickly. And sometimes that one I think, well, trees should suck up more water, but they don't. They actually make more water. This particular one isn't really food for work. It's more what I'm going to call food for bribery. Vaccinations, and those of you in the healthcare profession know that some vaccinations need a second or maybe a third booster, correct? They would pay the mothers food if they would bring their children back for the second and third booster shot. That way they stayed healthier. And otherwise they would say, well, they look healthy to me, and they wouldn't come back for that second and third shot. So kind of a bribery, but it's working. A lot of the food that they have is grain, and they don't have healthy food. We enjoy apples here. Ethiopians didn't know anything about apples. They're trying to grow apple trees. Again, a nutritious food for the children. Plus, if they're fortunate enough, they'll have enough that they can sell. And if they can sell, again, they can buy the books, they can buy the uniforms in order to go to school. This apple, every time I see it, it just kind of reminds me of the world. It's round. I was on the other side of it, watching them try to grow apple trees and improve their lives. Presently, Ethiopia is experiencing their worst drought in 50 years. Things are drying up. 95 million people, 50% of them are under the age of 18. Children who will be left to starve unless the likes of Canadian Food Grains Bank steps in. There's other organizations that are in the same caring food aid. I like Canadian Food Grains Bank, and there's a couple of reasons. One, they use a lot of volunteers. They use people like me. I'm not paid by them. I even paid to go on the trip. All I do is come back and tell folks like you that they're a great organization and that They earn your money. Canadian government, the Global Affairs Committee, just recently changed. I think you saw up there CEDA, Canadian International Development Agency, but it's now GAFC, G-A-C. For every dollar you give them, give Canadian Food Grains Bank, our Canadian government gives four more. That means for every dollar you give, that's $5. Give Canadian Food Grains Bank $5, and I'll tell you, they can make a lot of food for a lot of people. We took $5 to the grocery store. It doesn't last long. It's pretty much gone. But over there, you can feed a family for a week because of the food that they eat, because of the cost of it at that location. So what can you do as individuals? First of all, one of the requests that the Ethiopians often would say is, pray for me. Pray for me. That's what they'd say. They'd come up and they'd say, pray for us. Doesn't cost us a thing. We can do it anytime. Pray for those children that are hungry. Pray for Canadian Food Grains Bank and other organizations to get the food where it needs to go. Right now, there's a problem in the media because how many of you knew that Ethiopia had the worst drought ever for 50 years? How many of you knew that? A couple of you did. Excellent. Why? Because most of the media right now is on Syria. Not to belittle what is going on there. I don't mean to do that. But because it's so strong, we kind of lose sight of some of the others. Draw awareness to Ethiopia, to the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Spread the word of what a great organization it is, if you can figure it out that it is. Check out their website. They've got lots of videos, lots of information. Give some money. If you can financially give them anything, even that $1 to make five, give some money to them. And if you can't, perhaps you can organize a fundraiser. Now that fundraiser, that was huge. That was huge. That was, I think, probably one of the biggest. Doesn't have to be that way. There's a group of women, I think they're in the London area, and they have crocheted and knit scrubbies, scratchies, pot scrubbers. They've done it for years. They ask for a donation of $1 for each scrubby. They've raised hundreds and hundreds of dollars through the years. Another woman up in the Markdale region, she gathers aluminum cans. She crushes them, she bags them, and she hauls them off to the metal recycling. She also, herself, has raised hundreds and hundreds of dollars and donated it to Canadian Food Grains Bank. There are endless possibilities. As an urban church, you can maybe be part of a partnership with a rural church where there are farmers willing to donate their land, their machinery, and their knowledge to grow a crop. You can go out and help them pick stones. I will give you one idea, though. Don't go too far away. Try to keep it somewhere close. And if those of you are connected with other United Churches in the area, I know there are some that are involved with Forest Hill, perhaps, that's involved with one in the Hanover area. There's a lot of them. Find an urban or a rural church that might be interested in joining partnership with you. You supply the money for the inputs, for the seed, the fertilizer, perhaps the diesel if they don't want to, and work on it that way. Ask for donations of cash for Christmas, your birthday, your anniversary, instead of somebody buying you another gift that you really don't need. It's a great way. You take the money, you hand it to Canadian Food Grains Bank, and everybody's a winner. It's a wonderful organization. As you can see, I'm kind of passionate about it. I'm kind of convinced about it. As Meg said, it's been around in my life since about 1990, thereabouts, give a few years. And it is a good organization. So I encourage you to check out their website, do a little more research on it, prove to yourself, or disprove, if you need to, that it's not what you want, or that it is what you want, because I think you will be blessed to find what it is. And like I said, go on a Food Grains Bank study tour. Definite eye-opener. Thank you.
Carol, on behalf of the congregation of St. James Rosemount United Church, I want to thank you for coming here today to inform us about the great work being accomplished by the Canadian Food Grains Bank. I personally have seen the devastation of malnourishment and lack of safe drinking water in a remote area of Western Kenya. So I just think that, you know, we living in a country such as ours where we have bountiful gifts, I think it's ethically responsible for us to share our good fortune. And definitely the Canadian Food Bank, Food Grains Bank has set, and you, people like yourself and the farming community, have set a tremendous example. You created a path that, you know, us city slickers should be able to follow. And I think we know what we would have to do. So thank you for coming, and it's greatly appreciated.